Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the AMAA, Martial Arts Masters, Blog Talk Radio Show, hosted by the American Martial Arts Alliance, dedicated to building the awareness of professionalism in the martial arts through martial arts management and student development.
Good evening, everyone. It's Joe Corley, and I'm here in Atlanta, and I'm joined here in Atlanta by Keith Vitale in this part of the world, and we have from Washington, D.C., we have Jeff Smith with us. He's at the football game up there. I can't remember the name of that team in Washington for some reason.
Oh, shut up. Washington
Redskins. Oh, yeah, the Redskins. And then from the West Coast, we have Michael Jai White. And, Michael, please tell me that Wallace wasn't putting me on. He said that if I say Michael Jai White, I'm saying it the correct way. Is that right?
Yep, he's right about it.
Excellent. Well, welcome. Glad you're here. And then in Raleigh-Durham, we have Jesse Bowen, who is the host of the AMAA Martial Arts Masters. He's the host of this weekend's AMAA Nationals and the Who's Who. A lot of things going on. Tonight we'll be asking a lot of inside information of our guests, things that we wouldn't normally hear or read about in a martial arts magazine. And Jeff Smith is going to have to leave us first. So I thought I would start out with Jeff. But first of all, Michael, let me say it's really great to have you joining us. Keith, same thing. Jesse, I can't wait to hear why you decided to take on this project. But Jeff, one of the things that our fans from Facebook asked about is what it was like to actually fight on that Ali Frazier undercard. Of course, I was there with you there in the Capitol Center, and you fought the very last fight before Ali and Frazier got in the ring. I don't think I've ever heard you explain exactly what you were feeling in your gut, you know, going into that fight with Kareem Abdallah. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, first of all, to be on the same card with Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, and especially on the Thriller from Manila, which was their third and decisive fight, you know, it was really an honor. You know, leading up to that the fight, I actually got a chance to do press conferences and get a chance to meet them and Don King and travel in New York and Chicago and Washington, D.C. for all the prelim, you know, the pre-hype and all the TV. So it was quite exciting. Of course, I was fighting live in Washington, D.C. at the largest sports arena in Washington at the time, which was called the Capitol Center. It had a capacity crowd of over 30,000, and it was sold out. So we had quite a card, and then they shot my fight via satellite right before the main event, of course, with Ali and Frazier. So it was quite exciting to lead into their fight. And, of course, with that many screaming fans, and, of course, I had Asa Gordon in my corner. I had you in my corner. I had Jerry Rome, who I considered one of the top heavyweights, or light heavyweights at the time, also as a training partner. So I felt very prepared. The training that I did leading up to that fight gave me the confidence to know that in this 11-round fight that we were doing, I had the confidence to know that in that if it went to 11 rounds, which if I got a chance to end it early, I would, and hopefully I wouldn't be on the receiving end of that ending early, which never entered my mind at the time. I was always a little bit leaning towards the confident or sometimes overconfident attitude. So I knew that pressure on him, he wasn't going to be able to get through all 11 rounds and keep moving like I was. So I figured I could at least outpoint him if I didn't knock him out. And with him being about 215 to 220 pounds, he was 6'3" at the time. Of course, I was 5'11". I didn't grow any. My weight at the time was only 175 pounds. So he had about 30 pounds on me. But even that didn't shake my confidence. I still felt that I could take that title. Of course, I was the light heavyweight TKA world champion at the time. He was heavyweight, so we were actually fighting for Don King's heavyweight title. And, of course, after winning that title, I relinquished it because I didn't want to have to fight all the time at that light heavy. The only reason I did then was because of Joe Louis. He was actually supposed to fight Kareem, the heavyweight champion, but because he got hurt about 6 to 8 weeks before that fight, he had dislocated his shoulder and hurt his ribs. He wasn't able to fight, so he recommended that I take his place, and Don King went along with it, and of course I agreed to it full-heartedly. You know, when you have that kind of crowd and that kind of pressure of fighting in front of 50 million people worldwide, you know, on hindsight, looking back at it, I felt, you know, for being that big a venue, I should have been a lot more nervous than I was. And to be honest with you, I wasn't nervous at all. I think my preparation for the fight kind of took care of that for me. I felt I could, you know, I could win the fight. So I went in very confident and conditioned. So I knew that I had what it takes in the tank to finish if I had to. So with that, and of course,
what most
there
people
was only
don't
one...
know is what I was going to say is what most people don't know is that 5 days before that, Jerry Rome hit you with a right hand and it opened up a cut over your eye that would have stopped every fight in the world, but you couldn't and wouldn't give up on it. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, that was back when Grandmaster Jun Rhee's safety gear was still, you know, just coming out. So Jun Rhee insisted that we fight with safety gear instead of the boxing gloves. And some of that safety gear had a little bit of, they had reinforcement on the sides to keep it from ripping, but it also, because it was vinyl, it also made a little crease in the outside edge of the hand. So when he punched through a right hand, I slipped it, but the outside edge of his glove creased my eye, and it just sliced a cut all the way down to the bone. Now, the good thing about it, if you can call that a good thing, is that it didn't bruise, so it didn't swell. It just had this vicious cut. And, of course, you were with me at times, so we went to Georgetown University Hospital, called in a plastic surgeon, had them sew it up with 11 stitches. Well, that was 5 days before the fight. We told the surgeon that we were going to have to, and that was actually 7 days before the fight, and we told the surgeon we were going to have to take the stitches out in 5 days, which he said was ridiculous. He couldn't do that. And so when we said we were going to do it ourselves, he said, okay, I'll do it. And after he took the stitches out, it was very obvious that I had a massive cut right there. There was still quite a visible slice in the eye there, even though it had healed up some. So what we did, we had a press conference at the Touchdown Club here in Washington, D.C., which is is Washington's biggest sports club. And all the TV crews were there and everything. And so we had a press conference, and they were, you know, we knew we were going to be in front of the lights and everything. So we decided to go to Elizabeth Arden, which is a ladies' makeup place right down on Connecticut Avenue, and we had them do a professional makeup job. So they actually did it just like a movie where they cover up some of your flaws, and they covered it up with makeup, and we were able to you know, pull it off without them even noticing the cut. So, and of course, I had one of the best cut men in the business with Asa Gordon in my corner. So I knew if we got it opened in the fight, he would be able to keep it closed. And that's basically what happened.
Well, and Michael Jai, were you able to see the fight that night live by any chance?
No,
were you even alive then?
No, he was watching it from his baby crib. And his mother made him go to bed, and he didn't get to see the last round.
I know I eventually saw the fight, but I don't know if that was a replay of it years later or not. I don't think I was able to stay up that late.
You were watching it from the womb.
Yeah, it was very popular. A lot of pregnant women wanted to make sure their babies saw that. You know, an interesting story about that is that Jean-Yves Thériault was actually, he was watching it on closed circuit in Ottawa that night, and he walked outside and looked up at the heavens and said, "Thank you, God, I have found a home." And that's when he started training for kickboxing. And Jesse, now, the thing that brings us all together, of course, is this event that you're doing this weekend. You tell everybody about the lineup, starting with Friday and Friday night, and then Saturday and Saturday night and Sunday. What can everybody expect there in Charlotte at the AMAA Nationals? And Jeff, whenever you have to go back and watch, what was the name of that team again?
Oh, you be quiet now. You know my Redskins. Oh boy. And you just jinxed this because Pittsburgh just scored another touchdown.
Oh, you mean the Steelers? Oh yeah. I've heard about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have to go and we ask you a question, you're not there, we'll know that you've left.
I'll mute out and listen in a little bit before I go back.
Okay. That sounds great. Jesse, tell us about the weekend there in Charlotte.
Wow, this is going to be a really exciting weekend. It's truly turning out to be a Legends of Legends of Legends weekend. We've had, you know, bios of over 300 masters and grandmasters of, you know, the greatest in the world actually send in their bios and want to be a part of this project. You know, and this is the reason why I said the martial arts and the Kendrick and the brotherhood of people coming together and to be able to share. And the outpouring has been really great. You know, I really do appreciate you guys. Hey, Michael, listen, thank you for the support that you're giving to this. And, you know, Grandmaster Corley and Grandmaster Smith and Keith. And, you know, that's why I said we have all of these people. We have the greatest people. This is a dream, actually. It's sort of like I haven't woke up yet to say that, you know, this has been so amazing, the outpouring. And the reason why I feel that the outpour of what we're going on, what we're doing, is because we're coming with so many different facets of the martial arts business. You know, I've always been a professional, meaning that, you know, really wanting to, you know, grow my martial arts business. As I said to you, Mr. Corley, before, I had three goals after making black belt, and that was to open up my school, to become second-degree black belt, and win at the Battle of Atlanta, and I think fourth place is the best I've got out of the Battle of Atlanta. But, you know, this weekend coming up, we have Cynthia Rothrock, who's the guest speaker. The weekend kicks off on Friday. We have a business summit, and that's why I said professional. You know, martial artists, you know, really it's about learning how to run your martial arts business. And it is a business, whether you want to think about it or not, because you're having to pay taxes. This is a business. So you can have both the best of both worlds of becoming educated and learning how to really manage your business. I mean, we have the very best. We've got Grandmaster Dennis Brown, who's on the board of EFC. You have Grandmaster Jeff Smith, who's with Grandmaster Stephen Oliver and their organization. I mean, it doesn't get any better than we have Grandmaster Lawrence Arthur, who's a phenomenal coach. He's actually my business coach. Then I'm going to be on the program, and I'm going to talk about, you know, learning how to integrate success coaching in your martial arts school. We're not talking about techniques. We're really talking about how do you help people to set goals? How do you learn how to set goals? What is the mental aspect that builds success? Because we're always kicking and punching. Some schools do meditation, some schools don't. But in order to make change, it's really on the inside. So I'm going to be sharing some insight on that. So we've got everything from, you know, learning about your numbers, what you need to do. You can ask questions. You're going to be there. So we've from 10 until 2, that's what's going to be going on. Cynthia's going to be there, you know, making her personal appearance. So like I said, we got so much going on. Then that evening, you know, we're going to chill out. We're going to have our AMAA VIP reception and Grandmaster Corley. That's going to be hosted by you and Grandmaster Smith. And so that's going to be really great. You know, we're trying to put people together. And that was the reason why choosing Charlotte. Not choosing Charlotte because we want to start hosting tournaments in Charlotte, but Charlotte was the next step up from the Raleigh-Durham area, which connected, you know, the South Carolina, Atlanta, North Carolina, Tennessee, you know, Georgia. So it's put it's in a good central place for this particular event. And you know, that's sort of why we actually chose Charlotte. And plus, there's a lot of things where people can do. We're not that far from the airport. And, you know, you can really take your family in and have a great weekend. And then on Saturday, oh, yeah, we'll be doing book signings all day. So this gives you a chance to order your book online. And if you order your book online, we're going to get it signed for you, and we're going to ship it. I mean, this is a great opportunity. If you think about the legends that's going to be there, it's going to be involved, you know, with the program. And then we have the AMAA Nationals Tournament. And we have a sport karate league, and we're joining with several other organizations. You know, for the past several years, the Battle of Atlanta has been one of the tournaments that used the AMAA sanctions that we brought people in to compete. This year, the Battle of Atlanta is our elite tournament. The Capital City Classic, you know, Grandmaster Dennis Brown. And by the way, I don't know if I mentioned his name a few moments ago. If I did, it's great. But he's going to be there on that card as speaking to everyone. And then we have the tournament going on. We have his tournament coming up as an AMAA sanctioned tournament this year. We actually are partnering with the Sport Karate Museum, some things that they're doing. We've been sanctioned by the sport, endorsed by the Sport Karate Museum and Official Karate Magazine. So we've been having a lot of great things going on. And then we turn around after the tournament. We honor the legends of the martial arts. I mean, and then the book is really about sharing their stories, you know. And that's what we're really about, is the stories that we tell, not about the trophies that we won, but it's really about the stories that we tell. You know, listening to talking about the fight with, you know, on the card with Muhammad Ali. It's really about those are the stories, the things that we have done, because those stories from the great martial artists that we have coming are very important, and they cultivate a direction for us to be able to follow that we can go. And our students need to know about the history, because we're losing that part. And as we came up, you know, in the martial arts, we had all these things going on. We didn't have a lot of technology. You know, we had a lot of the just ABC things. But now it's changing, but we don't want to lose that history. Now, I want to know about Keith. You know, I mean, I remember seeing him, you know, fight back in the day, the grueling, you know, the greatest fighter in his era. I mean, you know, with Michael Jai White, you know, we're seeing him every week. Every week I see him, you know, I watch his show, but all the things, he says, this is history, and how do you get to be that good? And Keith had someone, a student that called me about a week ago, the parent called me, and he's out of South Carolina, and he was so proud. He said, well, Keith said if my son does this and this, he's going to come back out of retirement. I'm going, okay, wow. I'm going, oh, this is going to be good. Yeah. But this is what we're talking about. You know, these little guys, they know if they have been exposed, they know about who Keith is. They know they want to know. They want to look at video. They want to model. So the tournament is that growth place, and this is what we're trying to build. And then, like I said, on Saturday evening, you know, we honor some of the greatest martial artists, you know, that's ever lived, you know, during our era and time, who have been the people that have gone out and cleared the land and have made the way for everyone else. Last week we had on the show, you know, we had Helen on the show, we had Linda Denley on the show, we had Cynthia on the show, we had Mikey Rowe on the show. So it was great, but it's so exciting if we will share this with our students and the power of the sport of karate, sport karate, and finding good events and turning them to wholesome events. So that's one of the reasons, but the big reason that I started this, and we wrote the book last year, was to honor my teacher. He wrote the book back in the early 80s, he and his partners, and as they're maturing and getting older, I wanted to do something to recognize him. And so coming back this year doing the book, it was the same thing, to come back and have everyone not talk about their trophies, but to tell their story of why they got started. And this is what the book is built around as the premises of it. It is why I got started. So, you know, this is what really that I'm looking at is the change that we still can have, you know, the best of everything that we do. But remember, standing on the shoulders of legends will help us to reach that next level.
Let me play off that, because we'll come back to Cynthia's seminar on Sunday. But Keith, you and Michael Jai both ended up in the martial arts kind of as in, you know, in kind of an indirect route. And Michael Jai, I read that you said that you and Mike Tyson had some similarities in your background, and that martial arts ended up being great for you. Maybe the two of you can share with our listeners here how you went from a place. Michael Jai, we'll start with you in New Jersey, and then Keith, go to you and talk about how you went from track to martial arts.
Sure.
Well, I was born in Brooklyn, and then I started there, and then we moved to Connecticut, to Bridgeport, Connecticut, which was actually rougher than Brooklyn. But
wow.
Yeah, and I luckily went you know, found martial arts and trained really incessantly, you know, with it. And I think I was an insecure kid, and I needed that shelter. I needed to build that armor, you know. I trained with I trained in Japanese jiu-jitsu, then I wound up doing Kyokushin, and you know, stuck with that quite some time. Got a chance to just train with some great people, and it really changed my life. I've been on my own since I was 14 years old.
How did that happen? I read that. How'd you end up on your own at 14?
Well, luckily, I haven't grown an inch since I was 14, so I look much older. Yeah. It's funny because at 15, I used to compete in the men's division. You know, in tournaments in Harlem, and I kind of hustled to make prize money and do whatever I could. I didn't grow up with I didn't quite have the Ozzie and Harriet type of background. It was a little rough where I'm from, but I mean, martial arts was my sanctuary. And early on, see, I'm getting put in the paper for winning heavyweight men's division at all of 15. And then a community center that I would work out at gave me the option to teach. And I started teaching there. While I was, you know, I was training with, I was training in Kyokushin and Taekwondo at the same time, and then I would be teaching, and because they thought I was a grown man, so, you know, I was being paid under the table, but here I had something like 200 students, and
wow.
And so it was kind of a trip. I would be different clubs. Like there was a club called JKD. I don't know if you remember that, but it was, you know, in the point system world. Well, the owner, he would pay me to train and travel with them and represent them in tournaments when they, you know, travel up and down the coast. And
wow.
So I grew up really fast. So, I mean, I'm doing whatever I could to survive. And eventually, you know, I thought the smart thing to do was get my grades up and go to college and kept with the martial arts. I mean, at 17, I took a Greyhound bus across the country, and lo and behold, was lucky enough to start training with Bill Wallace over at
who were your stars? You know, we became friends with Bernard Carrick, who became the New York City Police Commissioner, and you know he says as a young man he was there in New York reading about Joe Louis and Jeff Smith and Bill Wallace. Those were his heroes. Did you have heroes at that time?
Absolutely. You just mentioned them.
Yeah.
Joe Louis was a picture of Joe Louis was one. I only had a few pictures up on my wall as a kid. Joe Louis was one of them.
Yeah.
And
wow.
I said I wanted to look like that when I grew up. And then I got a hold of it was like 8mm footage of Joe Louis fighting in Peter Urban's tournament, a few other tournaments, and then of course my other hero was Bill Wallace. So I mean I'm on the East Coast where it's like another world. I mean, until I came out to the West Coast, it was like my world kind of opened up a lot more. But you know, these were my heroes. I always consider myself the luckiest martial artist I've ever known, because to be able to train with the people that I trained with, Shigeru Oyama, Bill, and Joe, I did seminars with Bill, seminars with Joe, and trained with Benny Urquidez, Tommy Hearns, Sugar Ray Leonard, in their fight camp. And learned so much about footwork and striking and you know, little things. And you know, I wrestled in college and I trained with Wu Bin in Beijing, who's Jet Li's teacher. So I've just been really blessed, and I think martial arts, I owe so much of my life to martial arts and just the idea, the discipline of overcoming obstacles. And that's really what it's about. I mean, everybody, you know, looks at the kicking and punching and all that type of stuff. But it's about your mind, you know, you overcoming yourself, you overcoming obstacles. That to me is the formula for success in anything in life. So, I mean, that's the thing I celebrate. And that's the thing the church to which I pray to, you know, because I owe so much to it.
Well, I want to come back to you in a second, because one of the questions that I had, too, was about bringing some of those traditional values, even traditional techniques, and bringing them back into the cage in this upcoming movie that you've got, which looks just absolutely great. In fact, I'll premise that by saying I talked with Pat Johnson, you know, who is my mentor and hero and big brother, you know, put more than $1 billion of action on the screen with The Karate Kid and Ninja Turtles and Mortal Kombat and Batman and Robin and more. And I told him about what you were doing with the use of the kata inside the ring with the flashbacks. And he had one word. He said, brilliant. So I want to ask you about that in just a second, if I can. Keith, one of the interesting things I saw is, you know, the first picture you sent showed you sprinting across the finish line with these humongous legs. Yeah, I think you must have weighed, 150 pounds. Looks like you had the legs of somebody who was like 220 or something. And you showed up at track one day and just outran everybody, and then you ended up taking that speed and turning it into some fairly quick kicks from what people tell me.
Well, I was the complete opposite of Michael Jack. He is good-looking, big, tall, strong, phenomenal actor. I actually thought he was an actor first and then learned martial arts, but now I hear his martial arts first. None of those adjectives could be ever said about me or ever has been said about me. You know, I think
the good looking is because I know because people come up to me all the time and said, "Are you Keith Vitale?" And I said, no.
I know.
No.
Well, you know, my dad was in the service, so we went to Italy. I grew up in Rome, Italy, and it was a wonderful experience. I grew up playing in the Colosseum, and I just love history. I just love just everything Roman.
Wasn't that your
and
major
then,
in college? Weren't you a history major?
And so when we moved back over to the States, I was 7 years old, but I was in the third grade. Now, I have a grandson, Sam, who's entered the third grade. I mean, entered the first grade. He's 7 years old. I just can't imagine. I was smaller than him, so I was in the first grade, coming back from Italy, and I entered the third grade. And so I was the smallest, and I was the youngest in the class, and I really wasn't ever picked on a lot. I could always make people laugh, but I found solace in running. I just like to run. It's not a big deal. And one of the odd things, I have so many people from my high school that always talk about me and go, "Oh, my gosh, you know, Keith went to the same high school." When I went to my high school 10th year reunion, only three people knew me. No one knew me because I haven't entered my growth spurt yet. I was just, you know, I started school at 5 years old, and I graduated really early. But what happened was my dad wanted me to play baseball, and I played 8 years of baseball. And then he said, "Try out for the baseball team." And I happened to go, and this guy goes, "Would you like to run with me today?" And I said, "Sure, I need to get in shape for baseball." So it was a cross-country route. And very quickly, I ran it, came back, no big deal. He says, "Can you be here tomorrow?" And so I showed up the next day. And the coach of the cross-country team was there, and he brought this guy. He said, "Would you mind running with this guy?" And I said, "Sure." So I just followed him, and we ran. Well, that first day of running with this particular person, we broke the school record for the cross-country record. Then we were undefeated. We were undefeated all year long. We went to the States 3 months later, and we took first and second in the state, and we beat the record by over a minute. And the coach was always amazed because my body was – I just had a great cardiovascular body assistant for it, but I always asked the same question. Why is everybody talking about cramps? What's a cramp? And at 15 years old, I didn't know what a cramp was. I could just run full speed. I could run and eat. And so I just was gifted in running, not gifted in martial arts, but gifted in running. And then the next 2 months later, I was in an inter-college meet, and I was running the third leg of what we call a distance medley, and I was doing the three laps. And so it goes one lap, two laps. I did the three laps, and there was a guy doing the four laps, the mile run. And at 15, only been running a few months, I ran a 3:01 for the three laps. And at the end of that, it was a big national event, and then I had literally 30, I guess, you know, it was college coaches all around me, and I was going, I just ran around lap. Why aren't they around everybody else? But I figured out I was pretty gifted in just running, and then it paid heavy, like I said before, it paid extremely heavy dividends because that first summer after college, I got a scholarship to a college in Charleston for running track. So I came home that summer, and then a friend of mine said, "I want to take you to the University of South Carolina and meet our taekwondo instructor." I sat there and I watched him. We talked a few minutes. He said, "Listen, if you were ever to come to USC, I'd be glad to train you myself." I went home that day. One day, I went home that day, called my track coach, said, "I'm dropping my track scholarship. I'm transferring to the University of South Carolina. I want to do something called karate." And at that time, in 1972, nobody had ever heard of karate before. And I started with karate, and I just remembered how slow I was compared to everybody else. It took me 2 years to get my black belt. I went back to that same college to fight, and I remember I won an event at the college. The entire track team I was a part of 2 years earlier were there watching, and my coach came to me and he said, "Vitale, you made the right decision. You're much better in karate than you were in track. I went,
wow.
But just imagine, so now I'm in martial arts, I'm fighting tournaments, and I don't get tired. Just think about that I don't have to be better than you. I can beat a Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali if they're tired together. They can't hold their arms up and they can't breathe. That's when I turn on. You know, so having all that distance running background and then entering the sport, and a lot of times during that era, most of the contestants weren't in the best of shape cardiovascular wise. And I just loved it. I could just put pressure on people and just fight and fight and not get tired. And one of the things I did when I go to every tournament, I would go up to somebody, introduce myself, and would you mind if we traded techniques? And I'd count 8 different people every single time. I always thought if I ever lost my first fight, at least I fought 8 different people. So by going to tournaments, I'd fight 8 people, then enter the tournament. And then about 3 tournaments in, I fought Jerry Rome. I was a green belt. He was a blue belt, and we're under belts. And it's the first time, Joe, I met you. You were the center referee.
Yeah.
And it was pretty interesting. I was fortunate that day to beat Jerry Rome. 2 years later,
wow,
I'm working for you, and Jerry Rome walks into the karate school, sits down at the bleachers, and says, "Keith, you're one of the only guys to ever beat me." He says, "We need to fight." And I said, "Well, here's what I'll do, Jerry. You drop down a couple. You drop down a light heavy or middle. I'll go up to middle, and we'll go from there." But then he started coming to the school. He became my training partner, and just a wonderful experience.
Well, that tells a lot about the speed of your kicks. You know, everybody that goes back and looks at your videos now says, just can't believe how fast your feet were. And the added part there about your stamina is great. Now, let me jump back over to Michael if I can. You know, like I said, I saw the trailer for this Never Back Up, Never Surrender. Is that the right title?
Yeah, never back down, no surrender.
Never back down, no surrender. That's right.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, last night I finally saw the new version of The Kickboxer with Alan Moussi and Jean-Claude Van Damme in it. Have you seen that?
I've seen some of it.
Yeah, I finally saw it last night. I know Alan Moussi is one of Jean-Yves Thériault's students, and I got a chance to meet him in Montreal last year. What a super guy he is. The camera really likes him, and what an athlete he is. You would really enjoy watching him work. But anyway, in your trailer, I saw these flashbacks that you were doing, and you were doing a traditional form. What was the form that you were doing the moves from?
It was a combination. Goju form. Goju form and one Shitaru form, and I kind of it's kind of a personal thing. I would sometimes do, I would do kata, but then would you know they have the term bunkai, which is the practical application of it. But I would see where fighting, even modern fighting, how some of those techniques apply. I would train with, and I train with and spar against a lot of people who are professional MMA people. And a lot of them really don't have the basics. A lot of them are missing certain aspects of basics. And because of my formal background, I'm able to exploit certain things that a lot of the fighters, you know, who just got into it fighting,
yep,
lot of things that they lack. And so I really applied stuff that I really experienced. Like I trained with Josh Barnett, Rampage Jackson.
He's a pretty big guy, isn't he?
Yeah. And a lot of, people who are known for their striking. And so I kind of use things in real life in the movie, and I kind of, put some of that stuff in there, certain aspects. So, I owe so much to traditional martial arts, and like I say, well, I mean, I feel like martial arts is designed to make a complete person a great citizen as well, not just fighting. But, you know, there's things that you have to do in the curriculum that it may not be your favorite. You know, sometimes you have to do katas even though you like fighting. Well, if you do katas, you're better off, and you're training your discipline. It's not just about what you want to do. There's, you know, there's a adherence to tradition and, you know, and a lot of other aspects. And I just think that's great for the individual, because in life, you're going to have to do things you don't want to do. You must be disciplined and overcome them. So,
now,
I mean,
did you choreograph all those scenes yourself, the ones that included that, or do you choreograph all your fight scenes?
I choreographed the majority of them. I wrote the movie, and I directed it as well. I'm the director, writer, producer.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, I was able to kind of put a lot of the – I made the movie kind of like a love letter to traditional martial arts underneath this other narrative.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's really neat for the people that are listening out there. I highly recommend, if you haven't seen this trailer yet, go take a look at it. When is it released?
Well, the movie's been released, and I believe it's on video on demand now.
Is it?
And I believe it's on, you know, you can see it on video on demand and iTunes. And
I must have read the wrong thing, because I thought I saw a release in 2017 or something.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's released. And actually, you can get the DVD now as well. And
beautiful.
Yeah, and I believe it'll be on Netflix sometime pretty soon.
Well, that's great. I'm going to go on demand and see that this weekend. I talked to my little Xfinity box, and I said Michael White, and it pulled you up, and so I've got you ready to ready to DVR, but I don't know. I didn't see the movie title come up, so I'll ask it better questions tomorrow. And Keith, the question that people wanted to ask you too was about your first actual film, I think, was with Jackie Chan in that Wheels on Meals, wasn't it?
Right. And your mentor and good friend, Pat Johnson, called me up on a Thursday night, said, how would you like to go to Barcelona, Spain, and make a movie with Benny Urquidez and Jackie Chan? I said, I'd love to. He says, you have a passport? And I went, yeah. He goes, you need to go to the airport. Tomorrow we're flying out. And so we went to Barcelona, and it was an honor. It was like Jeff Smith talking about fighting on the Ali card. Truly an honor. And we knew so. Benny Urquidez and I knew so going into the film, that we'd be making history, we'd be part of history. And the reason we thought so was because he did so many stunts and took so many risks, we actually didn't think he'd be around a long time. And when he got there, he sat us down and he had a little DVD player of all of his stunts and in all the different places in films he's been hurt. And he would show us, and here's where I've been hurt, and here's where I've been hurt, and here's where I've been hurt. And I went, oh, my gosh, this guy's not going to last. And he did things that, of course, nobody else would dare ever try. But it was twofold for me. I enjoyed the film with Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung and the third partner, Byung Yao. They were all just wonderful to work with, great experience. But also, I got a chance to live and train with Benny Urquidez at the same time. And at that time, I was doing point fighting. I was the number one fighter in the country point fighting, but I was also rated number five in the world full contact, and I had like six wins at the time. Benny was in my same weight class, and Benny had, I think his record was like 56-0, and I was like 5-0 or 6-0. And so I thought this might be a great opportunity to train with him. And so we got that. It was wonderful. We'd go to the gym, and we're fighting for PKA, we didn't kick below the belt. And Benny fights internationally, of course, and so he would train me how to fight and use my legs. And I actually enjoyed using my legs. And he taught me how to block and the correct way to do so, but it was such a wonderful experience. But I always wanted to know what it would be like if I had to fight Benny, because I might be fighting him years to come. And so one day we were in the gym together, so Benny goes, well, let's fight. And I'm thinking in the back of my mind, good, I've been waiting for this. So now I'm at the top of my game. Benny's a little older, and Benny's a full contact fighter. Now, when he was in his prime, he was phenomenal at point fighting. But this is my time. And usually, and in my mind, I'm sure everybody thinks the same way, but I'm thinking there's no one on this planet that I can't beat. So Benny and I start working out, and we go at it hard. And I remember hitting him no less than 50 times. And my final technique, I hit him with a back leg round kick that hurt my shin, hitting him square in the teeth, right in the nose. It didn't even faze him. And then I said, Ben, are you okay? And he just smiled. He says, are you ready to fight? I looked at him. I went, Benny, no offense, but I'm the only one fighting so far. He says, are you ready? He did some shift angle kick to my leg that hit me so hard in my legs that tears just burst out of my tear ducts, out of my eyes. And I said, time out. I did the universal T, time out. Benny looks at me and goes, Keith, you can't say time out. I said, Benny, I just did. He goes, Keith, you can't say time out. I said, Benny, I just did. He says, Keith, you're not allowed to say time out. I went, not only am I going to say time out, if you ever kick me in my legs again, I'll take a pencil and I'll stab you right in your eyes. I said, that hurt. I said, oh, my God, that hurt more than pain. That's the most pain I've ever experienced in my life. And Benny laughed. He smiled. He goes, Keith, he says, how about this? You fight PKA. He says, but somebody walks into your gym or a street fight, are you going to tell them, well, I don't fight below the belt? He says, realistically, you can't do that. He says, let me train you, teach you how to fight. And I went, that makes a lot of sense. That truly makes a lot of sense. And so he would work with me and teach me the angles and kicks and how to kick. And I'm so blessed that I was smart enough never, ever to fight him in the ring, because just that, you know, I sparred a lot with him, but that one day just taught me. I might have lasted, you know, 5-10 seconds with him. His power to the legs was just incredible. And he's such a giving person, a wonderful person. So it was great. Him and I would live with Jackie Chan, and Jackie at that stage of his life was really trying to improve his English. So he would talk to us and talk to us and talk to us to enough where I'd go, Jackie, shut the hell up. You're driving me crazy. Don't sing to me anymore. He loved to sing to me and sing and sing in different cultures. And we'd laugh. We don't sing to each other here. You know, we might say, take a look. But in their culture, it's okay just to break down and sing. And Benny would look at me, and I look at him, and I go, is he singing to me? He's singing songs to me. But talking about a talent, and my best story for Jackie Chan ever was we were getting ready to do our first scene together, and Sammo Hung is the director, and he says, all right, get everything ready to go. And the camera's set up. The people are there. 100 people were on the set. And I look at Jackie and I said, Sammo, what am I doing? You haven't told me what I'm doing. You haven't choreographed it yet. And he says, don't worry. Jackie Chan looks at me and he says, Keith, he says, here's what I want you to do. He says, throw some kicks. So I just did a variety of different kicks for him. As I'm kicking, he took his hands to his knees and he started doing like drum beats. And the drum beats were in rhythm. And he would just, I said, well, what are you doing? He says, I'm working out the beat of the fight. I'm working out the rhythm. He goes, Keith, he says, fight's about rhythm. It's about beats. He said, take the two best fighters in the world, put them together, but without a beat, a rhythm in the fight, he says, subconsciously, you're not going to like that fight, even though they're the two best fighters in the world. He says, so what I do is, it's rhythmic. I develop a rhythm, a beat, and then I put your kicks to it. And I went, wow. Can I take notes? This is phenomenal. It was like 101, you know, stunt fighting for me. And then
that's
we
way over my
just
pay
had,
grade.
Yeah. Well, we just had a blast. And those were tough guys. I mean, but it taught me how to do multiple fighting at one time with Sammo and weapons. And these guys, there's no SAG in Barcelona. They would laugh. I mean, you take pain and you work real hard, but what a wonderful experience. And So it's still one of the key times of my life.
Well, I want to tell you guys, this has really been a pleasure for me. I know the way this book is coming together, the people that are going to get a chance to read about you guys and other people that they've looked up to over the years, this is really going to be a nice piece of history. Jeff Smith and I have been helping Grandmaster Bowen with this for the last couple of weeks, and we're seeing all the manuscripts and things, and it's almost mind-boggling the amount of work and energy and heart and blood and sweat and tears that have been put in by so many people around this country. We did that video where we said we get to stand on the shoulders of greatness, and so people are going to be standing on you guys' shoulders for sure. And Michael, is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners here tonight about what you have coming up next, what we can look out for? I heard about your project there in South Africa, which sounds very exciting.
Yeah, I'm the host of a MMA reality show called Last Fighter Standing, and we're launching it in South Africa and then planning on taking it around the world. The rules make for some of the most exciting fights you'll ever want to see. There are 3 2-minute rounds, so you know you got high action in each one of them. And once someone's taken to the ground, they only have 20 seconds to be on the ground. They're stood up after 20 seconds. So if you want to put on a submission, you have to do it in that time. And the audience really gets involved in it. They start counting down once people hit the floor. Because some of the most boring parts of watching any MMA is when they're just lingering on the ground for a very long time. And so this is like, it makes for some amazing, amazing fights. And we got the finals going on in Johannesburg coming up. And so... You know, I got to be there to host that. So I'm somewhat like the Dana White of the show. And then I got a couple movies coming out, and I got some more action stuff. A movie called Cops and Robbers, where Quentin Rampage Jackson plays my brother in the movie. And also my real wife plays my wife in the movie, who's also... Yeah, she's also my my love interest in Never Back Down, No Surrender. And our daughter is in the movie as well, so keeping it in the family. I got those, and I got two other films coming out as well. So it's been busy, and it's been very interesting, and I've been I'm continuing to be blessed.
That is great, and Keith, you've got a project that you're pulling together. He's with his history background, Keith has pulled together a really interesting project about Daniel Boone.
Right. And and before I go any further, but Michael J., I'm one of your biggest fans. I just think you're a phenomenal actor and martial artist. So
well, thank you so much. Coming from you, man, that's high praise, man.
Ditto from me.
Thank you.
I researched Daniel Boone's life, being a history major. I just grew up loving who Daniel Boone was, and he's one of the frontier American heroes. And so I decided to write a film about him, a screenplay, which I have, and I put together an entire package. I have producers, and we're looking for funding now. We have some interested parties. We're going to be shooting in Canada, hopefully beginning of next year. So we're very excited about the project.
Wow, congratulations.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
And let me finish off with Grandmaster Bowen, if I can. If you can take us to Cynthia Rothrock's seminar, and then just give us a quick recap, if you will, of the weekend, and then we'll look forward to gathering there with you this weekend in Charlotte and having a good time with with everybody that we can possibly entice to be there. Grandmaster Bowen still with us. Hello, Grandmaster Bowen.
Hello? My last story put him to sleep.
Yes, sir.
Okay, no, guys. I'm just sitting here actually just making notes. But this is what we're really talking about. We're talking about the history, the things that, you know, Keith is talking about. You know, I'm learning. I mean, I understand why, you know, he was one of the greatest sport karate fighters, because all the experience that he has. And this is what we have to, if you want to be the best, you have to be around the best. You have to train with the best, because that's the environment that will take you to the top. And this is what this whole weekend is about. And that's what I try to do. Hey, guys, thank you for allowing me to be in your presence, you know, because that's what I try to do, mm-hmm. is making sure that I'm associating myself, you know, with people that are heading in another direction, trying to, you know, discover their purpose, talents, and skills. So Cynthia, of course, is a, you know, phenomenal martial artist and film star and champion. So on Sunday, she's going to be actually doing a training workshop. If you're a competitor in the tournament, then it's absolutely free for you to come and, you know, participate in a training seminar, you know, with her. And this is the first time she's actually been, you know, in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. So she's very excited about coming. And she's a phenomenal person, great energy, very positive, very upbeat. So she's going to do a great program. And, of course, Mr. Corley, you know, as everyone has been on the show tonight, you know, of you and Grandmaster Smith, of, you know, coming in to support by, you know, doing a lot of the things that we need to have done, you know, at the event, from the, you know, the business summit. So everyone, really, you got to come out and participate in the business summit, even if you're not a martial artist, because learning about how the martial arts works, what happens, becomes a great concept for you to be able to build that desire to own your own martial arts school. And that's one of the things that the American Martial Arts Alliance, we want to work on. We really want to help individuals. You don't have to have a black belt to get started in the martial arts and to start a business. Because I truly believe, and I know for myself, that starting the martial arts, I actually received a bachelor's in martial arts management. And that's what, for the past 36 years, has been my foundation, is that I'm educated, and I've got information, and I've trained with some of the best, and I'm really looking forward to, you know, having Grandmaster Brown and Grandmaster Smith and Grandmaster Arthur sharing that information, because if you want to grow, you got to have a mentor. You know, and this is what, you know, that Michael Jai has said, that, you know, his mentors, you know, Keith has said about his mentors, Grandmaster Corley, you've already said about your mentors, and, you know, that's what I'm really working towards. So if you want to grow your business, then you need to have a good model in front of you. You want to be a world champion, you got to have a good model in front of you. And so this is sort of what we're doing. And, you know, bringing this information and sharing it with the world, not about necessarily all the trophies you've won, but what is it that makes you successful that you have gained from the martial arts? So this is a whole foundation behind Who's Who. It's not about having a whole lot of people there. It's about having the most important people there, having the most important people there. And, you know, we're, you know, again, with the Sports Karate Museum, we're doing a lot of work with them, and Michael Dietrichs. And we got so many connections that we have developed this year. We really want to change sport karate and make it better and more professional.
Well, if I may summarize the weekend that's coming up, I'm really excited to be there. We had a great gathering at the Battle of Atlanta in June. Keith Vitale's protege, Mike Genova, said out loud, he said, you know, a lot of people are dying, and we need to get together and enjoy each other's company while we're alive, not show up at the funerals and say things nice about each other. So we expect to see a lot of good friends this weekend in Charlotte. And I know the entire atmosphere is going to be one that's going to make for great networking. People that have read about folks will get a chance to hang out with Keith Vitale and Jeff Smith and Grandmaster Bowen and all of their favorite stars, and get a chance to talk one on one with them, get your book signed, and it really is a good way to change your lives. Any final words of wisdom, Michael Jai, that you can share with folks about what you like to see them get from the weekend?
Well, I mean, I'd like to get inspired. You know, the martial arts lifestyle is just one of creating, you know, a full just person, healthy, just the construct of training, the spirit, all of that. I mean, I know a lot of people sometimes they think they missed their chance when they were young. I don't care what age you are. Everybody can benefit from being healthy and disciplined. And that knows no age. And I just want people to extract what the true meaning of martial arts is, and to come out and meet some cool people, if anything.
Well, we really appreciate your support. And Master Vitale, what about you? What do you have any words of wisdom for folks that hopefully will be able to join us this weekend?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure if we consider them words of wisdom, but I'm looking forward to seeing friends. And I love being inspired by others, other great champions and other great martial artists, and listening to their stories. I'm a storyteller, and I love listening to stories. And I really want to commend Jesse Bowen. What a wonderful thing to be working on the behalf of honoring others, you know, in the martial arts. You know, we all have, I know I have more prestigious awards than I deserve. I don't deserve half of them. And there's so many people out there that haven't been given, shed the light on them. And this is a wonderful opportunity for people to go and hang out with good, you know, martial artists and listen to the stories and meet people.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining me and letting me try to host this this gathering of stars tonight. It's been really educational for me. I'm more pumped than I was when we started about being there this weekend. And I wish everybody that is listening, I hope you can make it there and join us this weekend. And Michael Jai, we'll look forward to seeing you, sir. And Keith Vitale, look forward to seeing you. And Grandmaster Bowen, thanks for all you've done for everyone. And we look forward to seeing everybody this weekend.
Wonderful.
All the best.
That's great, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. All right,
yes,
take care,
sir.
Guys.
Okay.
All right.